Business Hub.
With Focus Technology, bringing technology happiness to businesses in Cornwall.
Andrew, absolutely delighted to have you back in the studio. How's work been?
Yeah, great actually. It's been really, really busy. Lots of interesting projects coming out of the woodwork. Getting involved in quite a few migrations from Server 2003, which is fantastic. We're happy to see our customers are moving on. And lots of interesting technology developments coming up over the remainder of this year.
Yeah, fantastic. Because is it July the 29th? When the new servers launched?
Yeah, that's right, July 29th when Windows 10 is officially available. You can reserve your copy now through Windows Update, but as we said before, just kind of, you know, hang back a little bit, let the other people sort of jump on first, the early adopters, and then see what happens before you sort of take the plunge. You have got 12 months to do it, so there's no tearing hurry to do so.
So the teething process
initially. Yeah.
Fantastic. Today we're going to be talking to you, because I mean, it's quite topical. Last week there was obviously the strikes, the tube strikes. So a lot of people did struggle getting into work. Remote working has become a thing that people are becoming more reliant on, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not just sort of tube strikes, which, you know, there have been a few down here, but also, you know, in the middle of winter when the weather's terrible and people are advised to stay at home, you know, as a business you want to still be able to function and manage your customer relationships and actually sort of, you know, carry on doing business. So one of the sort of most effective ways of doing that is actually making sure that you've got a remote working strategy. So there's two reasons for this. For a big office-based company, obviously if people can't make it into work for whatever reason, or they're off sick but they could still, you know, perform some tasks, or indeed if you want to sort of start rolling out the ability for employees or part-timers to actually work remotely, it can reduce overheads. But also it means that on those times where people can't make it to the office, they've got all the facilities that they need to be able to work from home or somewhere else with an internet connection. So those layers of sort of remote working involve several elements. Firstly, and the sort of most basic one, is access to your emails. So provided your employees have got a sort of web portal or a facility to actually access those emails, or they've got them set up for their phones, tablets or other devices, they can at least exchange communications with their co-workers and with the customers they might be dealing with. Upper level from that, really, you've got full access to the, you know, your business network and other applications that you may have. There's different ways of implementing this. Obviously, you know, everyone knows about the cloud, and it's quite flexible to actually offer that facility to people through various means. But also certain organizations prefer to keep their data within the business and on site, so there's various other services and software that you can implement to allow people to actually remote on or connect on and actually work as though they were sat at their desk in the office. So you can start running other applications and other programs that may not be available via the cloud. So if, for example, you've got a case management system for your law firm and it's not a cloud-based application, your employees can carry on working with that as they would if they were in-house.
Have you seen the demand for remote working increase?
It has, to a degree, yeah. I mean, basically one thing that we do know, and ourselves included, is doing the extra hours is the bit that makes a big difference to businesses that are growing and have a strategy to grow in the future. So we're seeing a lot of particularly sort of managerial level staff and directorial level staff are more and more dependent on working remotely from home. So they knock off at sort of 6 o'clock, go home, have their dinner, say hi to their family, and then they're back on it again, you know, working away till you know, the wee hours of the night. And certainly for me, I use it all the time. I couldn't be without it. So it is a key thing, and it is something that is growing. Also, the adoption of distance workers or remote workers. So as in Cornwall, you know, we've got a lot of small businesses or parts of bigger businesses that are based in London, but their employees live down here for the lifestyle job, but they're working with these companies in London, so they have that remote working facility operating there as well. So it is kind of like a growing trend. And particularly with the facility to give remote workers access through their own equipment, which means that it reduces the cost to you as a business because you haven't got to supply the hardware as well. So there's all sorts of different pros and cons. But basically, you know, what we always do with our customers is we look at the need, look at what's available, and actually we assess what is the best fit solution. The other thing that we can do nowadays is through the Avaya IP Office system that we sell, the phone system, we can give those users the same access to the phone system side of things as well. So not only can they send and receive emails, access your line of business application, but they can actually interact with you and customers on the telephone as well. And that can be from, you know, your iPad, your iPhone, Android devices, or a laptop PC, anywhere you are in the world. Now, the great advantage of that is that you can obviously track and manage their calls through your phone system. They never have to expose their home phone number, mobile number, or any other details that are personal to them that they don't want to. And also, customers don't know that they're not in the office. So they could be sat in their little study at home, a call comes in, it gets routed through to their remote working system, and suddenly they're on the phone to the customer, and the customer doesn't know any different. So it's that business continuity aspect. It's that quality of, you know, remaining, keeping that communications consistent and basically serving your customers the best possible way.
That's great. Thank you very much for that. Also today, we want to bring up spam filtering. How much of an issue is this sort of becoming, or how much of it on your radar is it at the moment?
It's on our radar quite a lot, and it's cropping up more and more frequently. Obviously, I think in a previous show, we've dealt with incoming spam, which is, you know, relatively simple because you're in control of actually blocking that. The bit we're seeing actually is particularly in the business-to-consumer type businesses, whereby the likes of Hotmail, Sky, Google, etc. are all sort of implementing very strong spam filters. So we've seen a few customers trying to email customers with Hotmail accounts, Sky accounts, etc., whose emails never arrive. There's no bounce back, which would tell us what's wrong. There's no email in the junk mail folders of the recipients. They literally just disappear into a black hole. Problem with this is there's no way to identify exactly why your email's been rejected. So even if your server's got a good reputation, which I'll come back to in a second, it doesn't necessarily mean the email is going to get through. We have had situations where we've had to spend hours on the phone trying to get through to people at Hotmail or Sky, etc., to try and actually find out what's going on and why it's getting rejected. And it could be something as simple as the kind of wording you're using within your emails. So the way it works is if you have a business and you have a mail server, your mail server sends email out to the internet to recipients that you want to communicate with. Your mail server will have, on most spam filters, a given reputation as to whether you are a good mail server that sends out quality email to the right kind of people, or whether your mail server or even your network is sending out massive amounts of spam email to people who find it undesirable and start to block you. The lower your reputation, the less chance you've got of getting that email through to the people that you want to be communicating with. So basically, it's ensuring that, you know, you haven't got any viruses on your network that's sending spam out. It's ensuring that your mail filter has a good reputation. Also ensuring that the content of your emails is actually non-spammy. So there's certain keywords and phrases that you should start avoiding, like 0% free, various terms of words with free in it, etc. And also lots and lots of emails, one after the other, to the same recipient. So we did have a customer, for example, who was sending photographs of things that they'd done, but they, rather than compressing those photographs or putting them online, they were sending one email with here's a photograph, and then another email with another photograph, and another photograph, and another photograph, and ultimately they got blacklisted because it was just seen as spam because there was no other content in those emails. AOL is another particularly tricky one to get emails through. There is a process that you have to go through to actually get them to recognize your server as being a good mail server for receiving email, and that itself can be quite contorted and long-winded, but we've had to do that several times for a few other customers. So if you're in the business to consumer market and you are having difficulty getting emails through to those recipients, then basically, you know, find a company like ours or come and have a chat to us to actually sort it out and actually have a look and identify the reasons why that email's not getting through.
Can you find out what your reputation is like?
Yes, there's a website you can find on Google. It's called MX Toolbox. That's the one we tend to use. It seems to be the most reliable. You can go and put your domain name or your server IP address in there, and it'll actually tell you what the reputation of your mail server is like, and it'll give you advice on taking remedial action to correct the problem.
Are admin rights a problem?
What we are seeing is a lot of companies set their users up with admin rights on their desktop PCs. So that user has the ability to uninstall or install programs and software that they want to. They can change the settings on the computer, and they can do everything that your system administrator can do. Recently, there's been a lot of viruses kicking around. There always is a lot of viruses kicking around, and we have said it before, but if your users have admin rights, take them away. Generally, they don't need them. If you need to install software, it should be run via somebody, you know, like a sysadmin, your network administrator, or your IT provider, to ensure that the software is business related and they need to have it on there, who will then give them the permissions to do that for a temporary period. The problem with giving users administrative rights is, firstly, they can break stuff pretty easily. So the second thing is, if they're browsing the internet and we're talking, you know, even sites that people would think may not have any sort of malware or malicious content, like Facebook, for example, they can inadvertently download and install software that they don't want. So this week we had a computer come in onto the build desk. The user was saying that she couldn't access her websites and she kept getting redirected. After a few malware scans and some sort of diagnostics, she had, I think it was 485 different malware infections, four of which were serious because they were keyloggers. So she's now got to go through the pain of changing every password on every single account she's got online and her banking, etc., because that would have been recording what she was typing and sending it out to an unknown third party. So fortunately, you know, we caught it, we stopped it. But she had, and she's another user who had admin rights. If you take away the admin rights, it reduces the risk and it stops the chance of that software getting on your PC in the first place. And if you are relying on free antivirus, it's even more important that you don't have admin rights, because that free antivirus will not pick up most of the malware that's currently infecting PCs now.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much for that. If people want to find out more and contact you for more information, how can they get hold of you?
Yeah, they can give me a call on 01209 613 660 or drop me an email on andrew.davenport@focus-technology.co.uk.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And we'll see you in a fortnight.
Thank you, and be technology happy.
The Business Hub. With Focus Technology. Bringing technology happiness to businesses in Cornwall.